Dads Lifting Dads is a diverse community of dads coming together to celebrate our challenges and rejoice in our successes. It's about dads who know that true strength comes from vulnerability. And it's for dads seeking support and growth to become better individuals, partners, and dads. These are their stories. The greatest antidote to fear is competence. Welcome to the Empower series of the Dads Lifting Dads podcast. The Empower series is designed to give you back the power. The Empower series will see masters, leaders, and experts in a specific field sharing their knowledge and wisdom and allowing you to take back the power. On today's episode, we welcome Katie Holohan. Katie is a business owner here on the Central Coast, where she practices naturopathy and nutrition. Katie is also a women's mentor who aims to guide you inward to uncover your optimal health and emotional freedom. Very early on in her practice, Katie realized a lot of mums were coming to see her, and with Katie's holistic approach and outlook, this birthed Raising Healthful Kids, a social media account dedicated to bringing health to little beings and relieving stressed out mamas. Katie is an extraordinary human with a deep passion for empowering parents and kids. In this episode, we discuss a crazy amount of topics that aren't necessarily parenting related, but as you will discover, are totally related to parenting. Katie is an absolute powerhouse of information and resources, and I'm deeply grateful we connected, and I hope you enjoy the episode as we dive into it with Katie Holohan. Welcome to the Dads Lifting Dads podcast, Kate Holohan.
Thanks for having me.
I pronounced that correctly, right?
Yeah, you did. First one, most people say Holohan, and I always say, where do you get the two O's from?
Excellent. I didn't want to muff that up. Okay, it's an unusual for most of the people that have probably listened before, because obviously you're not a dad, but you're on the Dads Lifting Dads podcast. And the reason I wanted to get you on is, one, a selfish reason for my own benefit and to kind of build my own toolkit, but to also empower dads and parents that are out there, because you are, and I'll let you introduce kind of yourself and what you do in a minute, but you're someone that's an expert, a master in your own field, and to be able to share your knowledge with the community and to empower the community is something that I'm really conscious of doing, and I'm really passionate about doing. And we were talking just before I press record, and you know, like I said, one of the quotes that's ringing in my head, you know, the best antidote to fear is competence. And I really want to have, you know, not only competent dads out there, but competent parents and confident parents and empowered parents. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for your time today. If you just want to introduce yourself, tell everyone who you are and also what you do.
Yeah, awesome. Well, yeah, I'm equally stoked to be here. The word empowerment, I was so aligned on that. That's probably my biggest passion point. So in terms of what do I do and who am I, for the purpose of this, I'm a naturopath and nutritionist, but I guess who I am expands well beyond that. And as I said, I'm so aligned with you in the sense of just being so passionate about empowering all of us, really, empowering humanity, particularly for me, women and children. That's a real primary group that I seem to be working with at the moment, to feel confident and self-reliant. And so much of that started in being a naturopath and nutritionist, so coming from the health angle, but it has well expanded beyond that in terms of emotional well-being and just all aspects of life, because I've realized that all aspects of life affect health and wellness. I originally started studying when I first left school to be a psychologist, and never went on with postgrad study to become the psychologist, simply because I felt it wasn't holistic enough. And, you know, that's a big call in itself, but there was just so many things that seemed to be interacting with people's well-being that had a scope well beyond just catching them when they were already in overwhelm. And we were just chatting about overwhelm before, so I'm sure we're going to go into it more, but it was sort of realizing that people's physical and mental well-being seems to be being approached a lot of the time now from a reactive point of view. And I just want to switch that for people. I just want them to be confident in their preventative power. I just want them to be confident in their own body system and in their capabilities to take care of themselves and live optimally well, not just survive this life. So when we talk about mums and dads and being on a podcast like Dads Lifting Dads, dads matter to me because, you know, they're the foundation for the next generation as parents, you know, and mums obviously, but that's why I like working with parents, because when we talk about preventative, we can't get more preventative than who's growing up in our world today. So yeah, it's kind of my passion point. And as I said, on paper, who I am, being a naturopath, nutritionist, herbalist, but yeah, it definitely spans beyond that.
Beautiful. It's yeah, I think we can often we often don't know where to turn in regards to, you know, being a parent. And, you know, for me, coming across not only your personal account but you kind of your business account in terms of naturopathy and nutrition, but also I came across your parenting account, so raising healthful kids account, so pardon the pun, but where and how was that birthed? And I guess again, and you probably touched on it before, but you know, why is that, you know, something that you are passionate about?
Yeah, so when you say accounts, you're talking about my Instagram Raising Healthful Kids account. It was funny, it was, I guess it birthed almost accidentally, really. I was just working with so many parents, and you know, when you work with a lot of women, it's very consequential that you will be working with a lot of mums. A lot of, you know, most women, a lot of women that I work with are mums. So something I guess that kept popping up and I kept noticing was that if mum wasn't well, the kids were out of balance in the family, or relationship was out of balance with dad or the partner or hubby, and reverse vice versa, when the kids weren't okay or there was things going, you know, on with the children in the household, mum and dad weren't okay. So even though I maybe had mum sitting in front of me seeing me as a client, half of the time with her would be, actually our five-year-old XYZ and we just don't know what to do, can you help? And I would spend a lot of my time with mum as the client, but actually helping how to empower mum around what to do with the child. And I don't mean necessarily, sometimes it is behavioral and things like that, but even just health stuff or food or getting them to eat, you know, because everything, you know, you would know as a parent, so much of being a parent is making, you know, making sure your desire is making sure your children are living their best lives and being as healthful and well as possible. So when that's out of balance, I just, resiliency of parents to, you know, change anything about their own journey with health or wellness or their bodies or their food or their mindset, it was impossible because the kids in a lot of sense were coming first. So yeah, it was, I need to create some resources here. I need to get some more information out there for my clients. There was definitely a big pull for that. I always have been very maternal myself. I love children. So it also brings me, to be really honest and simple, just a lot of joy, a lot of joy. And as we touched on when you asked me to introduce myself, really, if I'm going to be here saying I want to live in an empowered, preventative world and self-reliant world, then you have to start with the kids because they learn it then, and we learn what we know and how we react to the world now when we were kids. And a lot of us as adults now are rewiring that. The we're going back and we're doing self-development work and we're doing trauma healing and we're doing, you know, all the things to work out how we're responding to the world and why. And, you know, a lot of the time we're trying to reroute that. We're trying to learn new ways. And I think the more that we can give to parents to help kids get that stuff in early or prevent, you know, things coming up in adulthood that we have to then go backwards for, that's where it came from. Sort of like it just, huge passion point.
You touched on a couple of things there that for me really hit home. And one of them is how much of an impact your kids have on not only, I guess it, I want to say health, but just your life in general. So I remember, you know, to be transparent, you know, Chrissy and I were in a couples counseling session and, you know, we were specifically talking about ourselves and our relationship, but we were so overwhelmed at that time with how Betty was. You know, she was really struggling with kind of who she was at that point, and it impacted our session so much that we had to talk about it with the counselor. So it's interesting you say that a lot of parents are, you know, coming to you with, you know, their own, I guess, health concerns or you know, worries or issues, but, you know, more nine times, I'm not going to put words into your mouth, but a lot of the time you're looking at it. And that's why I guess I love the holistic approach. You're looking at not just, you know, what's happening with the parent themselves, but what are the other factors? You know, how is the relationship with the partner, you know, the dad, the husband? How is the relationship with the kids? You know, are the kids okay? You know, is all that dynamic? And it's just such an important approach when you look at it holistically, that you're not just, you know, looking at one thing and one thing only. So, and then the other thing, you know, you talked about is, you know, past traumas and, you know, how impactful our upbringing can be on our kids. And, you know, I talk about this openly and, you know, on my social media accounts and on in podcasts before, but, you know, Betty's, you know, definitely been my, you know, she's my biggest trigger for growth, because, you know, she kind of holds a mirror up to me and is like, hey dad, you've got a problem, you need to fix it. So yeah, it's just, it's such a powerful thing. And I guess it leads us into, you know, and you touched on it then, you know, and we might just start with the parents. So why are parents coming to see you in relation to their kids? So, you know, I wanted to talk about the top reasons, but I think, you know, we discussed earlier, I think you've summarized it even better, and let's go down that path. So, you know, why are, you know, what are parents coming to you for?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to pull a little bit. I know we had a chat prior, but I'm also going to pull a little bit on what you just said then, Dan, because this is part of why parents come to see me. When you mentioned trauma then, off the back of me mentioning trauma, it's really interesting. And, you know, both myself and my partner, Dan, who's also a Dan, I know you're also very good friends with and connected with. Lots of your followers will know who he is as well. You know, when we talk about trauma and doing work with people's trauma, a lot of the time, just that word itself, we picture trauma as something happening, the act that's happened to us. So people think big things. People think violence, assaults, you know, grief, accidents, somebody dying, shock, things like that. But actually the trauma, those things are traumatic, but the trauma is actually how we feel and how we are in that moment that something has occurred. So when we talk about parents, you know, trauma or children's trauma and how one and the other affect the other, and, you know, why we parent certain ways or things come up in parenting that, you know, I always say feel like overwhelmed, because, you know, we are coping, even though sometimes it feels like you're not. It just is a harder version of coping instead of the more fluent, easier version of coping, but it feels like overwhelm. A lot of the time it's unaddressed feelings. And this ties into what we were chatting about earlier. When you say, why do parents come and see me? It is this sensory overwhelm of the whole body system. And some of it starts when we talk about the nervous system, some of it starts in these trauma states. So just to give an example of how this starts in, you know, say, for example, I'm a mum, which I'm not yet, but say, for example, I'm a mum and I grew up in a family that, you know, suppressed emotions or anger or wasn't comfortable with things like anger, or perhaps there was a lot of anger or, you know, misuse of power or something in my household. And so I developed either an aversion to that through not wanting that around me because it makes me feel unsafe, or I was told when I was young that it wasn't safe for me to be angry. That's something that as a parent, I would naturally, usually without having done any, if I hadn't done any emotional wellbeing work, pass through to the way I parent my children. So, you know, a little child who's angry or frustrated that they have to leave the park, stomps the feet, has a tantrum. The tantrums are a big thing. So to tie it back into your question, the big reason why parents come to see me is behavioral overwhelm. Kids just being off the Richter, 0 to 100, not sleeping, disrupting the whole family unit, really.
Yeah.
The stomping the feet, I don't want to leave the park, et cetera. Mum or dad can sometimes say things like, you just need to be a good little girl, get in the car, you know, stop yelling, stop screaming. And the child doesn't hear, as a child, we don't hear, good little girls don't get angry or shouldn't get angry. We actually hear anger isn't, angry little girls don't get loved, you know, angry little girls don't get seen, wow. You know? So I know it's a bit of a tangent, but I think it's important for where I'm about to head, but, angry little girls don't get seen or loved. And then what happens is there's this conflict between authenticity and attachment. So we, in order to survive, right from when we are born, we must form secure attachment. If we don't have secure attachment, we die because we are helpless as an infant. So we have a cocktail of hormones and biological rhythms that makes it easy for us to get attached to the parent when we are born. So some of those happy endorphins like oxytocin make us seem really cute, even though we might scream a lot as a baby. So, you know, mum and dad can form attachment and they're motivated to look after us. And same thing happens for the child. So when we're faced with a situation like, you know, a tantrum, and then that anger is shut down instead of being able to be expressed in the child, which is so common. There's nothing wrong with a parent who does that. It's just so common because mum or dad is overwhelmed as well. So it's just an instinct to say, come on, like get in the car. This is stupid, you know, and to shut that down. That in itself can feel traumatic because there's this conflict between the child's authenticity, which is at this time, I feel overwhelmed, I have anger, I need to move myself, which is a fight or flight response to things not going their way. And then it's sort of, if that's shut down, for the child, either I remain angry, but then I'm not going to be loved in that moment, which sounds harsh, but it's all the subtle things because, of course, mum and dad love them, but, you know, in child's center of their world at that time, love has been switched off because, you know, mum or dad is a bit cold, they've turned away, they've maybe yelled, they've stopped talking to us, they've grabbed us, put us in the car, whatever it is, but it's perceived as, you know, for the child at the time that love has gone missing, I guess, in the setting of authentic anger. So then what we learn is we learn to shut down self-expression and in order to keep those attachments, because if we don't have those attachments, we don't survive. So this can go on like right from being small children and toddlers all the way through to adulthood. And then as parents landing in my office or my clinic room or on a Zoom call with me and talking about your children having tantrums and things like that, As I said right at the start, a lot of the time it's about actually giving the parents the education and compassionate understanding that the way they're reacting is actually a product of some of the things that they didn't you know, they weren't allowed to express, or some of the ways they were loved or parented as a child themselves, and it's coming back out in them having and having children now. So when you said Betty is just your mirror for everything you haven't worked on yet, I say all of this with the utmost, you know, compassion and understanding. We've all done this, you know, nobody is perfect. This doesn't mean you're a bad parent. This is why parenting is such a channel, and relationship too is such a channel for healing our past selves and healing our own inner child and facing all of that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So I know that felt like a bit of a tangent, but I think it's super important, because I know a lot of the people who listen to your podcast, they are there to try and get, you know, exactly what you said, that empowerment and, what did you say? That competence is the cure to...
So the best antidote to fear is competence.
Absolutely. You know, so we need to understand this stuff in order to feel competent and confident in why have we reacted that way. So by having this information, you know, it can... as much as sometimes it feels like a bit of guilt, or like, what have I done to my child? It's not. It's about getting the information so that we understand and can have compassion instead of guilt for ourselves and our kids. So I know I've gone on a bit of a ramble there, but I guess the important thing is, yeah, looking at things like that, my big philosophy is the whole body as a system. So we, this is what we're chatting about before we hit record, and you even said, oh, I should have recorded that. So the whole body as a system. So those little moments like that tantrum at the park, the information behind that, that competence behind that, is what is actually going on for that child. Well, as a body system, the primary purpose of your body is to keep you alive. It's to survive, right? And you will always have this prioritization system going in the body, whether you're an adult or a child, no matter who you are, in order to survive and thrive the best you can. So we have a bunch of, like, almost like a watchdog system where we're scanning the environment, we're scanning what comes in, what can we use? So he's just eating a piece of food. Great, what can we use from that? Let's scan it, let's pull it apart, let's take what we need, get rid of the rest. It's very efficient. We're scanning all the time. So if is some kind of nervous system threat, so even if it's just a sensory overwhelm, like lots of lights, there's lots of sounds, there's, you know, things triggering that nervous system, the body doesn't know the difference between a tiger chasing us and just that nervous system going off because of, you know, modern world stimuli. So, you know, a child who has, you know, had lots of stimuli coming in, loud noises, can't process their environment, you know, like the shopping center tantrum in the middle of the aisle where it's just like, I can't get what I want, you know, think people aren't listening to me, there's lots of sounds, there's lots of noises, there's lots of people, mum needs me to go one way, dad's on the phone to someone, something else is happening, their little nervous system is processing all of that and saying you should either fight or flee or freeze to be safe, because the nervous system is just processing that input as threat after threat after threat, or something to have to have logical reasoning over. And for children, up until the age of around 7-ish, and it's hit or miss based on the research of when this develops in each individual, but around 7-ish, they don't have the development of their prefrontal cortex very well established. So when we talk about the regions of the brain, and I said the watchdog, the back regions and underneath the brain, so at the base of the neck, you've got lots of parts of that brain that we would call your reptilian brain. So the amygdala being one of those organs, it's your watchdog. So it's, when I say reptilian, I mean instinctual. So it's all of these fight, flee, you know, survival instincts are activated from down there. As adults, we get much better at being able to interpret that information and say, oh, the noise I heard outside was just the garbage man. But for a kid, maybe laying in bed, it's like, is there a tiger outside going to eat me, or a bad man, or whatever it is? And their ability to logically reason with that isn't there yet. As an adult, we maybe have heard the garbage bin 150 times, and we quickly logically reason and say, we don't need to react to that. So kids are learning this stuff for brand new every day. Every day is new inputs, whether we're talking about their immune system, their nervous system. There are so many inputs. They haven't heard the garbage bin 150 times yet. And they don't have that frontal region of the brain developed, which is that logical reasoning part. They're functioning primarily on the back parts of the brain. So, you know, they don't have the condition, they don't have the practice yet of how do I reason with this? So the toddler in a tantrum, you know, and this is where we're coming back to information is, you know, the antidote to fear. For a parent watching their toddler in a tantrum, they're not manipulating you. They are not, you know, trying to cause havoc for you. They are not trying to overwhelm you. They literally cannot reason with all of the inputs coming in and the conflicts between what they want, what they need to survive, and all of the sensory inputs from the environment. Same thing with that little immune system. So one of the most common things is like my kids are getting sick all the time and not getting better quickly. You know, they've got skin things, got sleep, and there's always a list, Dan. You know, it's always, it seems to never be one thing. It seems to be a list that parents come with. And that's because this body is a whole system. So that immune system, you know, it's detecting a virus for a child under the age of six. They get so many viruses. I actually forget the number, but it's huge, like a huge amount of times that they actually will present as sick. Whereas for us as adults, we would have been exposed to all of those things as well, because the kids are in our house, we will be exposed, but we may have only actually looked sick 3 to 4 times in that same period that the child might have looked sick 50 times. And that's because they're learning. They haven't, that nervous, that immune system at that time is learning, this is a new thing. How do we deal with this new thing? We need to develop, you know, in the immune system's case, antibodies to that virus or whatever it is. And it's practicing. It's practicing all the time. So very long tangent, but it's, yeah, I'm passionate about it. It's my philosophy behind it all. So when parents sit down in front of me and they, you say like, you know, what's the most common thing they come to you with? To be honest, it's system overwhelm. And it just manifests in different ways. You know, it manifests in many, many different ways. And even if we talk about, you know, well, sleep being disturbed, well, you know, if the nervous system's overwhelmed, then sleep can get disturbed. If sleep's overwhelmed, you know, and we don't get well rested, then the immune system can get disturbed, because the body will always be prioritizing what it needs in order to survive. So when something else ramps up, it would generally be at the expense of other systems quietening down, I guess. And that's the same for adults as well. I'm going to shush now because that was long and let you pull that apart and ask questions or, yeah.
No, that was, yeah, just listening. I think I know a lot because I'm passionate about this. So I like to read as much and get as much information as I can. But even hearing you talking, it's so, there's not only so much information there, but I can see it and understand it in a different light. So, you know, it's easy as a parent when you know, we'll go back to the tantrum in the supermarket to think that, you know, I think one of the first things that me as a parent thinks is that, oh, don't do this in front of everyone. And I straight away think it's about me. But, you know, you to break it down like you have, like we know that the shopping centres, you know, and it's not going to harm us. There's nothing unsafe about it. So we can rationalise that in our minds, in our brain, but kids can't. And you broke that down.
And I mean, even as an adult, sorry to interrupt you, even as an adult though, still sensory overwhelm in those places, right?
Like, yes, yeah.
Even though we've got the logical reasoning, we're still overwhelmed. We're just constantly overriding it for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, wow, yes. And it's just...
It's not appropriate as an adult to throw yourself on the floor or scream or yell, but it will. What happens is we do suppress it, and sometimes it will come out as... You know, if you get a phone call from your wife or something while you're in the supermarket and you're in sensory overwhelm, it's like, hi, yes, well, I'm just in the shops. I'm going to have to, you know, that kind of, you know, or we're rude to the shopkeeper accidentally. And it's suppression. It's what I said. It's that conflict between authenticity and attachment. So we want to fit in. We want to do the right thing in terms of societal conditioning, because to survive as human beings, we need to be in a collective and we need to be in a tribe, because we don't survive in the wild on our own. Our instincts tell us that. It's a biological instinct. You won't survive in the wild on your own. So we still have, it's like we have this ancient machinery system that we're trying to now live with in a modern world. And we will suppress things like anger and adult tantrums and things, because we know it's socially inappropriate and we would be, you know, it would be condoned for that. And we want to fit in. So we do suppress that. And sometimes it comes out with our people that we are most primarily attached to, because we know that they will, you know, we, it's like, you know, when they say that the people you love the most often get the worst of you.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes that's what comes out in relationship and in parenting, you know, and, that nervous system response, you know, or that system overwhelm, there are a cocktail of hormones that drive that. And most people know one of the primary ones is adrenaline. Adrenaline is designed for your heart rate to increase, your breath rate to increase, with the primary purpose of getting you ready to prime your muscles to run faster and harder, or fight harder and survive the battle that is about to come that your system has detected. So when we are in that fight or flight, you know, everything about your system is saying, we've given you all the tools to move or fight. And then when it's not socially appropriate to go anywhere, well, you know, that is quite detrimental to us. And as I said, sometimes it comes out as, you know, verbally not being very nice, or, you know, maybe we get sick a day or two after. That often happens. The nervous system goes off and then the immune system struggles, because we've had to upregulate in one area, as I said, and the other area struggles. But, you know, with our kids, this is where, just to keep tight about that, information is such power, because, you know, it's social conditioning that says a child shouldn't chuck a tantrum, but actually biological sense actually says that they're being pumped full of hormones at that time that are telling them to move their body. And then society or parent is saying, don't move your body. That's not okay. So they're having a pretty big internal battle there. And I'm a huge advocate for letting kids get that out.
Yeah. So, and that kind of leads us into where I wanted to go with this next is, so what do parents do for themselves in that situation, and what do parents do for the kids in that situation?
Yeah, definitely. So I think, first of all, just really getting informed is number one. Like, we can't not mention it. We've already mentioned it, but, you know, getting informed so you can actually rationalize what's going on. So as we said, adults do have this prefrontal cortex. So it helps us to work out what part of my reaction is social conditioning and what others will think of me and my desire to fit in to the tribe. Because, you know, if you're the one with the kid that's having the tantrum, or, you know, the kid that's having the meltdown, as a parent, your survival instincts are being triggered. You know, you don't want to be looked at and ostracized. So what part of that is my own reaction, and what part of that is actually reality? And the reality often is that when that child is overwhelmed, they do have those hormones pumping that mean they are going to move. And a lot of the time, if we try and interrupt that, we will get hit, kicked, yelled at, bitten. And then it's like, oh, now I've got a child who bites. Then there's that, you know, sadness and all of these things that come. So really reality checking. So naming it is something I talk about with emotional being stuff. Whenever anything's going wrong, naming it for ourselves and then reality checking. And we cannot reality check our own fears and our own overwhelms without information. So hopefully this podcast is a start for a lot of people to go and find that. And as you said, you already do a brilliant job of doing that as a dad, and it's transformed your parenting journey. So, you know, it does, go and find that information. But then in the moment, if we start to understand what's actually happening, it can really help to have tools to redirect that energy. So allowing space for your child to actually have that moment, when we talk about something like a tantrum, rather than trying to suppress that, what's a healthy way or a more appropriate way for us to get that out? So if they are hitting, I'll give you an example. I actually had a client on a consult the other day, and she has had a three-year-old that was constantly jumping on their lounge and just, you know, expensive lounge, just destroying it, throwing the cushions, when something didn't go his way. And I said to her, you know, let's give him somewhere else to jump and remove that energy. Is there anywhere? Because she was even sticking up signs, which was so appropriate, like visual cues to say, you know, don't jump on the lounge, all the things to try and get with his learning style. And none of it was working, and she was so overwhelmed, and the other kids were copying. And I said, you know, like, if you tell him not to do that, where does he go? And she was like, oh, you know, they've got $1,000 trampoline outside. And it was, yeah, but that's outside away from the family, and there's a lot of steps between the lounge and getting yourself outside. Not necessarily physical steps, that too, but just a lot of mental steps to move yourself. So things like, you know, I said to her, oh, go and buy one of those mini tramps and put it next to the lounge. And whenever he's doing that, say, it's just word choice as well, which can be hard in the moment, but yeah. You know, I can't allow you to jump on the lounge, but if you need to jump, here is your spot to jump. You know, or I can't allow you to hit me, but if you need to get some energy out, you can stamp your feet on the floor. I can't allow you to whatever because it hurts me. So there's a boundary, there's always boundary, but then definitely has to be a redirection that's based on this information, knowing that those hormones are going, knowing that that system's pumping. So it's not reasonable for us to expect our child to just shut that off. So yeah. Where are we going to redirect that energy to? And it's not always easy. It's definitely not. So in that case, if you are at home or if it's appropriate and your child is safe, for a parent, just knowing it's actually okay to put some headphones in, or it's okay to just rub their back and sit there and just, yeah, have your own headphones in or close your eyes so that some of your sensory inputs can be downregulated. I teach EFT a lot, so it's emotional freedom techniques. And there's some really good ones with kids, like even just rubbing their sternum is really useful if they fall over or if they're in a big overwhelm. That can be really, really useful for a parent. Even like tapping underneath the collarbones can be really useful. This whole series of EFT that I won't go into, but there are some videos on that Raising Healthy Kids page where I teach EFT for kids. And we do all sorts of things like being a gorilla when they have that big energy. So again, it's just a way to challenge it and be the example. So if there is something going on, sometimes it doesn't work to just say to the kids, don't do that.
Yeah.
Let's do this. What you actually have to do is say, daddy is being a gorilla now because I've got big energy. There's heat. There's lots of energy here where we've got lots of energy. Daddy's going to be a gorilla or a lion to get the energy out. And you might growl or you might stomp your feet, and then the kids are going to redirect that to copy you. And it just allows a safe way to get that out and a controlled way. Parents, adults in general, we love control of the situation. Yeah. That removes threat for us, you know. And, yeah, so being able to name it, reality check it, and then redirect that energy is definitely what's important. So finding a way to do that for your child. It's not always possible. So that's where we do need those, you know, in the car, do you need to have headphones on if you've got a child that's constantly screaming in the back? And definitely still turning around to them and saying, you know, I hear that this is hard for you, but we need to drive to wherever daddy's going to put his headphones in so he can keep you safe in the car. You know, so it's acknowledging them, but then doing what you need to do for you as well so that you can keep them safe in the car. Yeah, I don't know. Do you have any, like, for you personally, like any questions to help me direct that answer better so that we get.
No, that's that even for me, it makes a lot of sense. It is not only like for a parent being able to understand and rationalize it, but then for the child, when you say redirecting it, we're redirecting it essentially to play. Because that they understand play, like there's no point in us, you know, and words can be extremely powerful, but there's no point in us trying to explain to a child in language that we understand. So, you know, being able to say that, you know, you're going to be a gorilla, let's be gorillas together and get our energy out, is just, it's such a simple tool, but such a powerful tool as well. And again, it's not going to be appropriate every single time, but it's how we choose to redirect it in that situation. And it's hard to redirect in a situation when you're in the situation.
100%. That's why we get that information first, right? Like, it's not easy. I say this to people with health habits. A lot of the time when people come to me with health things they want to change, they're coming when things are already going wrong. So those systems are already overwhelmed, and it's very, very hard to create new habits when things are, you know, we have less resiliency when things are already, you know, going wrong, which is why I'm such a huge advocate for that preventative approach, you know, being optimally well when we have the resiliency to create that, and then we cope better when things go wrong. We don't always have the opportunity to do that, but it's definitely a passion point to keep empowering that. Something else that just came to mind then that I think is really useful, and I mentioned to clients a lot, is love languages in the household. So when we talk about what can we do in terms of, everyone just wants to be seen and heard. So even when we were talking about trauma before, really what trauma is not being seen and heard at the time. So if there is a tantrum or there is something going on, do you actually know what your love languages are in your family? So whether there's two of you in the family, it's just a relationship with no children yet, or it's a relationship with five of you in the household, what is each individual child's and also your partner's? Because coming back to nurturing each other as parents, you know, some days there are going to be days, and you'll back me up on this, I'm sure, as a parent yourself, where you need to tap out. And I think a really good thing is to be able to say, like, where are you at today? Oh, I'm only at a 40%. And the other person either can say, like, oh yeah, I've got the extra 10% to pick up your slack, I'll do 60%, or I just don't have that in me today. Great. What's gonna lapse for us? Are we gonna get takeaway tonight? Because we just both don't have that in us. But being able to do that, and love languages is a great way to do that. And knowing that for your kids. So there's a lot of the time where, as I said, it's not just as parents, but it's for all our relationships. You know, I might see mums who are saying, like, oh, I've tried to tell him, you know, older kids, I'm proud of him or whatever. But it's just not being received. So the love languages, just a bit of a recap for anyone who doesn't know, are ways of receiving love and affirmation, I guess. So you've got physical touch, so giving someone a hug or touching them, words of affirmation, so telling them how great they are at something or how proud you are in words. I've lost them now.
Quality time.
Yeah, quality time. So that would be the child that says, you know, when you say, what can mummy do for you, or what can daddy do for you? I just want you to play with me. And that's a big request for kids. So quality time, acts of service. So doing things for another person. So this comes up in relationship a lot, particularly for dads trying to work out a mum. You know, how does taking the garbage out end in, yes, I do want to be intimate with you tonight. Well, love languages, you know, so it's like taking some of those acts of service off the burden of somebody, and then gift giving. So some people really enjoy gift giving or receiving gifts. So we've got those five primary types, and just sitting with your partner or sitting with your children if they're old enough and having that conversation can alleviate so much in a household. All of a sudden, there's these reflections of, actually, we don't really nurture everyone individually in this household, but we can. And it can just be 5 minutes a day or 5 minutes every second day, having someone feel seen and heard. And this can be right from kids age 2-3 years old. You know, they don't have to be old enough to understand. You might just notice in their behavior patterns what they react best to and what they really enjoy. And as a parent, being able to do that, even though it sometimes feels like we don't have time to do that, it's the thing that gives you time. Yeah. So once you do start doing that and that child feels seen and heard, they don't have to behave in certain ways to get that attention. You know, yeah. We all, as I said, we have that primary focus on attachment for survival. So if they feel attached and seen and heard, a lot of the time other things, the nervous system settles down and other things settle down.
Yeah.
Knowing that for a kid who can't get to sleep, one of them might be physical touch. For another kid, they might be completely fine, you know, without that. So just knowing those things, so you can rationalize the things going on in your household, and instead of feeling guilty or like people or children are broken or like you're not doing a good enough job or that you must be doing something wrong, we're actually getting to the core of understanding, what are these little body systems doing? What are these little mental systems doing? And what are they after in this world? What are they looking for? And it feels like a big job, but as I said, once you have that information, it becomes easier and it allows space and love and kindness and acceptance into all the other areas, and the stress levels just seem to, information, as you said, that antidote to that competence. And, you know, you can't have competence without education and information.
Yeah.
And that antidote to fear and chaos.
Yeah. No, that's a, I think that's a great, a great resource to point our parents towards, because it's kind of, it for me, I think about it in terms of, you know, if we know how to fill the child's cup, like you said, it takes away so much of the other stress. And it's also important then for the, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier about, you know, parents being able to tap out, because, you know, a lot of people would have heard, you know, we can't fill from an empty cup. And I think as you know, and this might be just generalizing, but dads seem to find it easier to, I guess, tap out than mums do. So I know for me and Chrissy, like I enjoy, you know, going out to the water on, you know, not every morning, but occasional mornings. I enjoy going for a swim, a run. And that kind of, for me, recharges and refuels me to go back and to be able to contribute not only to the relationship that, you know, Chrissy and I have, but as a parent, you know, together as parents, but also, you know, at my relationship with Betty as well, because I find if I don't do that, and there's numerous things that I do to fill that cup, but if I don't do that, everything else is raised, and everything else is, now I'm on, you know, I'm not, you know, nice and simmering, I'm boiling already. And then it takes the littlest thing and then I explode. And then it's just like, and then I get so guilty and beat myself up and go, you know, why have I done that? You know, and then it kind of takes that backtracking to understand, okay, this is what happened, and, you know, this is how to kind of progress forward. So, yeah, I think.
I was just gonna say, and as a parent, you know, knowing what your version of that is that quickly fills your cup. You know, that's why I mentioned the love languages. You only might have that half hour or an hour in a day, or, you know, for some parents, it might only be 10 minutes, or if you're a single dad or a single mom, it might only be that 10 minutes or that half an hour between kids going to bed and the first wake up at nighttime, or you going to bed, you actually get to refill that. So you want to make that impactful for you. And on your note saying, you know, as dads sometimes feel as though, or it seems as though it's easier for them to tap out, really something really important, again, it's information rather than us piling a bunch of resentment and guilt, because this comes up a lot in relationship. It's just that, you know, dad seems to be able to just walk out, go to work, you know, compartmentalize his day, you know, and that's our generalization. It's the most common scenario. It's not for all families, but we need information on that, because that's actually biological. So for women, we are actually biologically wired to be connected to that child hormonally in a different way to what a man would. So just to have a think about it from an instinctual perspective, in tribal living and back in the days where we didn't have these concrete houses around us and we had to hunt for food and all those things, men are biologically wired to have a very linear, and this is that masculine feminine energy. So we're in that masculine masculine energy, very, very wired to have very linear focus, very, very streamlined focus with minimal distraction. And that allows a man to find his purpose and hunt and hit the target and bring home the goods to the family. And it sounds so, people go, well, or whatever, we're not in hunting days. But as I said earlier, we are living in ancient machinery here and we've brought it into a modern world. Yeah. So, yeah, dad's not out hunting anymore. And there are a lot of women in this masculine energy who are in the corporate world as well as being mums, which I think contributes a lot to women feeling really out of balance, because we are trying to do it all. And our superpower is actually biologically not to be in that 24-hour a day repeated cycle. We cycle very differently and we need times of rest. We take on a lot more external to us. We're not necessarily wired for that linear focus. So for a man, when he goes to work, his focus for that day is going to work. And it is biological. Like, you are wired when you're in your masculine energy, you are wired to be able to focus on that. For a woman, we would have been sitting in circle in a tribe, and we are actually designed differently. So we actually even have greater peripheral vision than what a male does, simply so that we can watch the tribe, watch children, watch a wider variety of space at a time. So we are meant to have more enhanced empathy skills from a biological standpoint. So as I said, we're making generalizations here because we can all develop and all go into feminine and masculine roles, whether we are biologically female or male, we have both. But primarily for women, we are generally more in that empathetic state, and we are hardwired to be more empathetic. So we can send our kids off to school and then cry about them 5 times a day while they're at school, whereas dad's like, they're fine. We've been told they're fine. And this, as I said, brings a lot of guilt, and we pile a lot of guilt and resentment and, you know, saying that dads don't care as much. It's not that. It's really not that. So I think that's important, if you have a lot of dads listening, for them to know, but also for the wives and partners and mums to know, you know, we are wired differently. It's not that dad doesn't care. It's not, you know, generally speaking, it's not that. We're different. So we have to know that if we're going into relationship and co-parenting together.
Yeah. I think, and this, you know, we'll put a bow on it in a second, but the understanding. So for me, awareness, understanding, information, empowerment, they kind of embody just everything. Because even just to understand that we're wired differently, understanding that we see it two different ways, it makes that, you know, it makes it easier to be on, especially, you know, with parents, with partners and things like that, to be one on one accord with each other, because you're understanding, you know, where each other comes from. And I know it's easier said than done sometimes, especially when you're in the moment, but yeah, to have that level of understanding and to know that we're different, and we even see parenting different, because, you know, that kind of, when we send the you know, child off to school, you know, dads just think, yeah, they're okay, they're in a safe spot, you know, and yeah. You can see, you know, mums think about it. I should call to see how they're doing. It's like, well, they're okay. But
even household stuff. Yeah. Like dad can sit and play games all day with the kids, which is amazing for the kids. It's all the kids want. And forget that there's like washing piled up in the laundry, the bin wasn't out, blah, blah, blah. Mum comes home, spits the chips, generalization. But, you know, it's so common, and says, how could you not see that all these things needed to be done? And, you know, all you've done is look after the kids all day. And it's such a common thing. Mums will say to me, you know, like, oh, you know, when he has the kids, he just looks after them and blah, blah, blah. But when I have the kids, I do everything. And there's this resentment. But, you know, we need information about that, because that is part of biological wiring. And we can learn to do better. And I do think that in some ways we can both do better as opposite sex, as each sex. We definitely can. This is not excusing. It's just information. For a woman, we don't generally sit and play, or we don't have sex with our partner if the house is trashed and nothing got done. We can't compartmentalize as well as what men can.
I think, yeah, really, really good there, because I think it's, you know, it's not a free pass for men now to go, yeah, sweet, I can just play all day. It's we can, you know, having that information, like for me, I'm just like, okay, now understanding that I can get the, you know, essentially what I need and what I want from my wife, and this is how I do it. And, you know, I think it's, you know, yeah, just such a powerful piece. And I wanted to, because I'm very conscious of time, both of our time, I wanted to put a bow on it with one of your posts on Instagram. And I was just going to read it, and I might, I guess, tell you why it kind of, you know, I remember when you wrote it and posted it, and I read it, I commented on it, and then I messaged, you know, your partner Dan after it, and I was like, Katie's won the internet today. It's like, for me, it was like the just you know, not only a powerful post for parents, but a powerful post for individuals, because I think, and without kind of going too much into it without reading it now, it, you know, we're so freely handing over our power. You know, if we talk about, you know, our journey or our story, you know, we so freely hand our pen to other people. So I just wanted to, I'll read the post, and then if you just wanted to, I guess, talk about it a little bit, and then we'll finish up and put it, because I think this ties the whole conversation that we've had kind of all together. So, the trust you hold in your body started with what you were taught as a child, how you feel about your capability to heal, be well, and do all of life began here, playing nurse kits and dress up doctors is fun, but knowing your own superhuman powers is better. Empowerment, trust in yourself, trust in nature. If your child is human, then they are superhuman, and I hope they know it. You are superhuman. We are so lucky to have medical personnel, equipment and services there for us if things are happening quickly or are escalating. But there's nothing more important than learning that your strength does not lie in the hands of others, that you have the ultimate right of access to that strength, that your body genuinely has your back, and that you were designed for survival in this world. God, universe created each of us with our own power. You and your children are born with the ultimate superhero toolkit. We weren't put here without the means or will to survive. Let's make sure our kids know it. What do your kids know about their body? How do they answer when asked what makes you better when you're sick? Are they giving that superhero strength away to others, doctors, nurses, police, mum and dad? Or are they aware of how powerful they are?
Yeah, even I smile when you read it. Because that's just so, oh, damn, like that, it sums up, that post sums up this whole talk that we've had, this whole chat, both of our passion points, but also, you know, your very first question for me was, where did that Raising Healthy Kids account birth from? Well, that's where, you know, I think it speaks for itself, but I will say it's a prompt to use information like in today's chat to go and find where your superpowers are, to have an utmost of trust in your system. It's so often when something's going wrong, when we get sick or, you know, we're struggling with something, that we, the first thing we seem to do and be conditioned to do is call it something wrong, which even I just did then, you know, something wrong. It's actually often, it's something out of balance. And that's what we were saying, you know, this whole system as a whole, it's something out of balance. It means that your body is working overtime somewhere. So reframing that and knowing, you know, and my body is actually working overtime here for something for me. And I was put here with all of the systems I needed generally to survive. And if there's an overwhelm in that system somewhere, it's generally, I need to look around me and find the cause of that. I need to explore that. I need to have a look at where that's come from. You know, is it a virus? Is it a nervous system overwhelm? When we talk about things like anxiety or mental health, you know, it's so easy to get down on ourselves and think, you know, I need help outside of me. And sometimes we do, and that's amazing, but it's so worthwhile getting yourself to a point where you know you have your own back. Is that ultimate self-reliance and our ultimate trust and faith that you have everything you need. And I know that doesn't come easy, but it does start in childhood. So, you know, where did that come from for you? And the post asked that of those who read it. Where did it come from you? What were you told when you were sick? And if anyone wants to go look at that post, it explains things like, you know, what is a scab? You know, a scab is in on a sore, and the infographics at the top of the post, when you flick through, it says, you know, a scab is actually your immune system building a wall to protect an opening from an outside infection. You know, it's a healing over to help protect you. And what a cool little system we have. I just think it's just this prompt to just remember what you are and how powerful you are. And particularly when we think of creation of children, you literally, you and your partner have come together as a portal, literally, to bring new life to Earth. It is phenomenal. And we forget the power of our body. We forget the power of our intellect and our mind. It's not even intellect, it's intuition. It's that intuition and listening to the body. Don't ignore your body's whispers for, you know, 6 months, for a year, for 5 years, and then be at a point where, yeah, it's sort of, yeah, don't get your body to a point where it's screaming at you before you listen to the whispers. I'm always saying that. But yeah, read that post again and again and again for anyone listening. And the message is there in itself, just empowerment. Yeah, you are a superhuman in every capacity, mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally. And to tie it back into everything we were saying, you are one big watchdog system to protect you and keep you safe. So when things seem like they're going wrong, whether it be for you or your child or in relationship, everything can be rationalized when we start to think, what inputs have come in that my system hasn't yet processed? How can I help my system process that? Sometimes that is that you might need some extra nutrients. Sometimes it is that you might need to go easy on stimulating places or stimulating noises, or you might need to take a break. Sometimes it is that, you know, you might need some extra rest or sleep. But if you can start looking at it from that perspective, you're going to start getting to the causal roots, and you're going to have more self-compassion, more self-empowerment, and you're going to teach that to your kids.
Wow. I just hearing you talk, I get chills in my hair, standing on my neck, on my arms. It's just, yeah, I think that just, it sums up everything we've talked about, but how powerful we are. And I think, thank you for reminding us, and that post reminds us, but just hearing you talk, you know, it reminds us, you know, stop giving away everything. We've got it all. We've got it all. And it's that then, you know, okay, well, what do I need in terms of information? How do I then kind of draw all of that in and use everything that I have in a positive way to not only, you know, for me, it's not about surviving. You know, our bodies are designed to survive. It's about thriving. And that for me is, that's the most important thing.
Oh yeah. And when you get to that, like all the things we've spoken about with attachment, with, you know, instead of being in that survival mode where things have been detected as out of balance, and then you're kind of scrambling to, as I said, that conflict between authenticity and attachment and things like that, all of a sudden you are just your true self, and you don't need to look outside yourself anymore. And you might enjoy connection with others, but you aren't reliant on it anymore. You're self-reliant. You know, you've been able to realize that you can do more than just survive in this world, and that you have all the power to live optimally well, and yeah, in all the ways.
Beautiful and powerful. Thank you. Where does everyone find you? How do people connect with you? Let everyone know, please.
Well, that Raising Healthful Kids account, I've already mentioned, obviously, on Instagram. So that is literally just Raising Healthful Kids. And then I have another account called Katie Holohan Naturopathy. So Katie with an I-E, and then Holohan, H-O-L-O-H-A-N, and the word naturopathy. I also have a website, which is just www.katieholohan.com. It's currently being refurbished. So depending on when you're going to release this podcast, it may or may not quite be re-live yet. It's just been pulled down for redoing, but it will be up again in the next week or so. So that's a great place. And yeah, that's probably the best place to contact me, or the same on Facebook.
Beautiful. Thank you. I'm super grateful for your time. I appreciate you so much. Thank you. You are definitely an empowered human, empowering other humans. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. Honestly, best way to spend my time, being able to talk about this stuff and have people hear it. And yeah, for anyone who needs to reach out. And yeah, you're obviously also such a fellow advocate for this stuff. So I think it'll land well with your community and vice versa with mine, for them to find you. Yeah, so equally grateful.
Parenting is super rewarding, but it can be extremely difficult. I truly believe it takes a village to raise a child. It takes courage to share your story, and it takes strength to reach out for help. So I thank you for tuning into this episode. I genuinely appreciate you taking the time to listen. The Dads Lifting Dads podcast is not just for dads. So if this episode resonated with you, or you know a loved one that will get value from this, then please share it. If you would like to join our private Facebook group, you can find us by searching Dads Lifting Dads on Facebook. You can find me at Best Self Movement through Facebook and Instagram, and at bestselfmovement.com.au.